following program may contain coarse language, suggestive dialogue, and discussion of violent imagery and sexual situations. It is intended for mature listeners who can tell the difference between facts and opinions.
Curlo, the founder of TanamiFaithful.com.
And?
Editorial writer, Laser Kid.
And also joining us?
Stephen Oz, social media. He does stuff with social media.
Yes. So we actually.
The guy that
have...
sounds like basically CJ. We continue.
We have more than three people for once on the podcast, so it should be interesting. And
huzzah!
Yeah, if we talk over each other, it might happen. If not, well. I'll try to keep things organized. Y'all know how I like to keep things organized. And hopefully, Paul won't take us on some random tangent. But
you did summon me. You did summon me from last podcast. So now you're just going to get it now because you did that.
Yeah. So let's start off talking about Zom 100. We have two episodes to get through. When we left off at the first episode, we had Akira deciding he was just going to live his best time during the zombie apocalypse. Whatever might happen, happens. And he's cheerful. He's left his work. And so it starts right off with him having a nightmare I've definitely had myself, where he's working and it's just really horrible and shit's going wrong. And then he wakes up and realizes, oh no, I don't have to work anymore. And he actually makes this funny comment about saying that he quit his job, which is amusing because, I mean, I guess you can quit, but when it's the apocalypse, you can't really do your job. But
it's more like a job quit reality, really.
Yeah. I guess it shows how deeply traumatized and ingrained he was into the toxic workplace culture. Anyway, so he goes about cleaning his apartment and decides he's gonna chill and have a beer in the morning day, which I heavily approve of. He's got, you know, the newscast on in the background, the world's just going to hell, and he's like, well, I'm gonna have some beer and it's all great, except, you know, he finishes his beer and he's out. So gotta go to the store. Of course, it's not that easy with a bunch of zombies running around, but he makes do. So you cut to the scene of the neighbors, who we learn are the Kosakas, and they're also panicking over the zombie apocalypse that's happening and trying to figure out what to do. And the husband goes out onto his porch and in this pretty comical moment encounters Akira shimmying down the pipe, trying to figure out a way to get out and get down to the ground without encountering a zombie. And they see each other and they kind of both yell. And then they figure out, oh no, we're not zombies. Nobody's a zombie here. But Kira's like, well, I'm going to the store. Can I pick you up anything? And they're like, oh, well, okay. You can grab us some, you know, any survival gear. And then some toilet paper would be nice. And he's like, great. So...
You gotta love the bottle of energy that he is.
Yeah. I love his vibe, man. I mean, like, I guess you could panic, but this is just so much funnier. He's like, I'm going for beer.
And including a ridiculous song.
Yeah, he sings his beer song.
And that is one of the things that stuck with me with the show the most, is that silly beer song.
How does it go again?
Beer! Beer! All kinds of beer!
Yes. So he's at what is essentially not like a full grocery store, but kind of like a five and dime kind of store. And he's filling up on beer and then he sees a cute girl and she's got a basket full of looks like practical supplies and is stocking up on water and having a drink herself. And he kind of is awestruck for a moment, A, that he's found somebody who's not a zombie, and that B, you know, it's a girl, and he has this awkward moment like, wait, what do I do now? And he tries to get her contact information, and she just nopes out of that completely. And just as they're about to part ways, a horde of zombies starts coming into the shop to attack, and Akira gallantly stands in front of the young lady to protect her. And what we don't know, which we learn in the second part of this episode, is there's a truck coming to hit the group of zombies. And a moment later, she grabs him and throws him over her shoulder to get out of the way, saving his life as a truck comes crashing into the store, mowing over the zombies there. She declines giving him her contact information, reasoning that he is not prioritizing survival, and she can't have someone like that in her posse. So she goes on her way with her bike. He looks out to see that his bike is trashed, probably from the truck that came barreling through the shop. And so he's like, well, what do I do now? And then he says, oh, wait a minute, I can grab a moped. Yeah, and hey, this is actually faster. And as he's driving away on the moped, he realizes, wait a minute, I can probably get something better, because all of these other vehicles have been left unattended. And so he upgrades to a motorcycle, and it's a pretty cool looking bike, actually. And you get to see cool trick where he like hits a ramp over a zombie and kind of like smashes another one, and it's some really great visual effects to sort of add to the general gaiety of the situation. And then he sits down, and he goes back to first to see, you know, the Kosakas and invite them to share some of his beer, but they're gone. Yeah. We don't really know what happened to them. The assumption is that something happened to them, but we don't know. So I think this solidifies in Akira's mind. He gets back to his apartment, and he sits down, and that's when he starts making this eponymous list, that where the title comes from. You know, he decides, well, life is too short. I'm going to spend the next 3 years of my life doing things that I've always wanted to do. And then we switch the perspective to a woman who's on a treadmill. She is, it turns out, the same young old lady we saw before. And even though we don't learn her name then, we know from the credits that that's Shizuka, who is voiced by Abby Trott. And we know her from, we actually know her from Demon Slayer. She's Nezuko. So it's a fun, familiar voice there.
Always anyway, good to have familiar voices around.
Yeah, especially one that plays such a beloved character.
Absolutely.
Who doesn't love Nezuko, who's
precious and free. If you don't love Nezuko, we just can't be friends.
Yeah, everyone should protect Nezuko. So she's working out on her treadmill. She's watching the news. She seemingly tries to make contact with some other office. It's not really clear what she does or who she's trying to make contact with. And interesting juxtaposition to Kira, she starts making a list as well, but it's a survival list. You know, she has practical things on there like don't eat sugar, stay in shape, work out every day. You know, these are the items I need to survive. I need water. I need protein. I need all these things. She also starts watching some zombie movies so she can get an idea of, you know, how to survive zombies, which I think is actually kind of amusing, and if not somewhat practical, I guess.
But, well, I mean, it's only practical if the movie zombies behave like the real ones, though.
Yeah, which is essentially what she starts to observe, is how do they compare to the films? And she has this looking glass. She's viewing the other zombies and notice that some of them are slow and some of them are fast. And she thinks, okay, I have to figure out which is which so I can survive, because it can mean the difference between life and death. So she's completely opposite of Akira in the situation. She's all business, all practical, all survival. And then we see her go to the store. So it kind of, this is where we meet her initially from Akira's perspective. And there's this cute little moment where she walks by this, what it looks like a sweet, some kind of pastry, some kind of puffy.
Looks like a little cake or something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And she decides to not, she looks at it, is tempted, but she decides not to grab it. And then of course she sees Akira. And then we learn that, you know, she's having this internal dialogue observing the zombies, and she has her escape plan, and she's hacked this truck, and she was the one that orchestrated the truck crashing into the store so that she could get away and safely without zombies coming at her. And so lady got some skills. She's definitely someone you want on your team in the apocalypse, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
So that is episode 2. In episode 3, we get to we have a completely different scene. There's a young girl crying in a restaurant, and this blonde man who leads to rescue her from the situation, and it's kind of inferred. At first you don't really know, because these are like not related characters, but then it's inferred that he rescued her from the zombies, and then he leads out this group of people with weapons and starts fighting the zombies themselves to protect this place. This, I guess it's a mall, it's not really clear. But from the posters, we figure out his name is Sho. He's some kind of celebrity. And then we pan out to Shinjuku, which is kind of known in this area as like the, not quite the red light district, but the entertainment district, if you will. And one thing I noted that was pretty cool when they show the scenes of an abandoned Shinjuku is there's kind of blood and guts, but it's all these different colors, just like we saw on the first episode. It's not like gore. It's sort of, I don't know. It's like fun, if you will. it gives it a very festive looking, apocalyptic look, if you will. And then Akira rides up on his bike like a badass. And he's like, I'm going to find my friend Kensho.
And then we best kind character of in the show right here.
Yes, Kensho. And we go on to go back in time. We see this amusing scene where he's like, I got to do something cool with my beard because I don't have to shave anymore. And he tries to draw on his face with a permanent marker, which I don't recommend at all. You can grow the facial hair and it works, or you can't. There's nothing in between, guys.
Yep. I speak from experience, I cannot.
Yeah. And meanwhile, he still keeps saying, like, since I quit my job, I don't have to shave anymore. Like, he's still kind of stuck on this that he quit. Not that, you know, there is no work. And then his phone suddenly starts working. And he's like, okay. And in this really adorable sequence, he starts messaging a whole bunch of his friends. And then we switch to Kensho, who is in...
Oh boy.
This is just wild. He's in this freaky club. I guess it's some kind of sex club.
It looks like a love hotel. Well, Japanese love hotel thing.
It's something. It's something. And because you see a bunch of half-naked zombies running around.
Yeah.
And he's not doing too well. He's been surviving on water for 3 days, which is the max that a person can go, you know, with water. Well, the max person can go without food is a couple weeks, but like he's run out of water and he's starving. And then he comments that his drunk ass picked the bondage room, and holy crap, that is a extremely memorable scene where the camera pans out and you see this practically naked woman who is cuffed to the wall, and he's like in a corner kind of hovering in this bondage room with all this bondage gear. But I guess whatever you got to do is survive.
So. I guess so.
Yeah. What a way to go.
I mean, might as well. So then we have a bit of a flashback where we see Akira has a... Kensho has a flashback where he sees his friend Akira, and he's like all buff and his in his uniform and laughing hysterically, and he's thinking about his friend, and then his phone goes off, and it turns out to be Akira, and they have this really funny conversation where, like, Kenshiro's like, what's up, man? And Akira's like, hey, how's it going? What have you been up to? I quit my job. Where are you? Let's hang out. like, everything's just fine. And he's like, well, I'm kind of stuck here. I can't really get out. There are zombies. He's like, well, I'll come get you. Just text me your address. So he does. And then you get a bit of a backstory, you know, about their friendship. Obviously, we know that they were on the same rugby team together. But at some point, they had met up while Akira was still working for the exploitative corporation. And he has dinner with Kensho, and Kensho's like telling about his fabulous life and how great everything is. And he shows him pictures of his girlfriend. And then he's like, dude, you're so unhappy. You should just leave. Just quit your job, which is not bad advice. And unfortunately, Akira doesn't take this well, and he explodes at his friend. And it seems to be the last time that they spoke to each other, and it wasn't on good terms. So then we get a cut back to Sho, who's not doing so great. Pretty much all of his fighting crew are zombies or dead, and they're all closing in on him, and he's just ready to give up. And suddenly a very loud car horn starts going off. He's like, what? He's like, well, I guess it's not my time. And all the zombies are drawn towards this car. And in a stroke of brilliance, Akira has taped a football to the car horn and also set it on fire. So he's kind of hiding in the hotel fountain, waiting for it all to go down. And the car explodes, you know, with the group of zombies that it has drawn to it, which is pretty a stroke of genius I had not yet seen in him thus far. But he uses the opportunity to go in and get his friend, and they have this tearful reunion, and they're apologizing to each other. And of course, Akira's like, I'm sorry, I was really jealous. And he starts shouting, I'm sorry, but that draws all the zombies to him. So they both run up to the roof, and they're followed up by the zombies that they've drawn, and they're stacking a bunch of shit on the roof to close the door off so that the zombies can't get them. And Kendra's like, well, what do we do now? And Akira's like, well, we're gonna jump to the next roof. And he takes a run, and he's like giggling like crazy person. And he jumps like straight up something out of a parkour video and lands on the other roof. And he's, you know, ecstatic, like, hey, it worked. And Kensho kind of just stares at him. He's like, look, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to die here. And I wanted to tell you that I was lying to you. My job sucked. I was miserable. I never wanted to do any of that. It was toxic, which I think there's a kind of overlying message here about these corporate workplaces, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anywho, he states that he wished he'd become a stand-up comedian. And Akira's like, all right, then do that. What's stopping you? And come and jump over here and we'll make it happen. And Kensho gets this burst of energy and inspiration, and he decides to jump. And Kira's like, but make it funny. And his version of making it funny is stripping naked in the middle of the jump. I guess that's a thing you can do. So he strips.
How did he get out of his pants?
Yeah, I'd like to know.
I don't know, but it's he Hulk Hogan'd it.
Anime logic. And he makes it there. He scrapes his balls climbing up, unfortunately, but he does make it. And it ends with the both of them naked on the roof with a couple of beers, and they're just having a blast. So now Akira's not alone anymore. He's got a friend. Hopefully between the two of them, they can have one functioning brain on survival. But at least they're together, and that's what matters. Yeah. Steven, what'd you think of these episodes?
I love them. I want to say that the animation's like really good, that and the art is really good, that it's not like a typical zombie show where there's like tons of gore and blood. The tons of gore and blood comes with like colors. It improves the world instead of like takes it down, you know, it makes it all drab and mundane. This show improves the world. I don't know. I think it's fun, and it's a different way of doing like a zombie movie, some type of thing, like some guys coming out of a zombie lifestyle into an apocalypse, which turns into a way that I don't know if he's like by the end of it might save the world, but you know, in the end understands more about himself, I guess. I just like it like that. It seems like plain and simple thing of doing something and twisting it and making its own style.
Yeah. I like that there's clear adult themes in this. You know, I've complained in the past about inundation of teenagers and anime, but these are adults. And then we have an extremely adult scene in some kind of a sex club or whatever it is. And but it's funny. It's not like it's not titillating at all. It's kind of amusing because it's like, well, I guess everybody's, you know, they were just going about their lives when this all happened. Literally, yeah. You know.
It's a normal, you know, show. Everyone had their own problems, their own whatever. And it's like, okay, everyone's doing something. And then this happens.
Yeah.
But our main character has been a zombie for 3 years already because they drained him so much at his work. And it's almost like he was already a zombie. And then when the apocalypse of all these zombies happened, that was his cure to go about and becoming a different person.
Yeah.
A rebirth.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Laser, what are your thoughts? Were you amused?
Oh, this show, it spoilers top to bottom is amazing. It's funny when it needs to be funny. It's emotionally touching when it needs to be emotionally touching. Yeah. It's incisive on work culture, the toxic side of it, rather. But also, you know, Kensho and Akira were fighting the last time they talked. But that doesn't mean they don't care about each other. That's something people need to know. Because sometimes people are like, oh, I had a fight with a friend. Well, I guess that friendship's over. Not necessarily. Back that up. Back that train up. Because maybe you might be able to salvage that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the apocalypse kind of changes things.
Absolutely changes things. But I mean, I take this sort of a story it's set in a zombie apocalypse, but it's not really about a zombie apocalypse. It's about people.
Yeah. I think it's definitely a journey of self-discovery thus far. I mean, we have them ending, you know, as the two friends bonding and obviously, I mean, it's pretty clear that there's going to be an encounter with, you know, our young lady again. And now she'll have two goofy guys to contend with. But I'm actually kind of worried about Sho and that little girl in the restaurant. Like, I hope they're okay. That was a pretty gnarly situation they got left with.
It is absolutely a gnarly situation they got left with.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more people in it that I think it's a host club, I would assume. That's what it would be, some type of host club.
That makes sense. That would explain his celebrity, too, in the restaurant vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And Kensho is voiced by Xander Mobus, and he's made a couple appearances on shows on Toonami. He's been in Naruto Shippuden as a young Madara Uchiha. He's been in which has not been on Toonami, but I'm going to mention it anyway because I love this show. Blue Exorcist Kyoto Saga. He plays Juzo Shimo, which is one of the Chima clan. He's been on Hunter x Hunter, on JoJo's Bizarre Adventure and Stardust Crusaders, Boruto, Demon Slayer. Just a, he's been on a couple things and more. I think people who were video game players like myself and played Persona 5, he played the main character, the nameless character Joker, or and in the animation they gave him the name Ren. So yeah, he's doing a great job. I'm definitely looking forward to see all these characters come together and their different dynamics. But I like that Kensho's goal is to be a stand-up comedian, because then it kind of really sets the tone that they're going to try to inject a lot more humor and a lot more humorous dynamics between the characters and everything. So I think that's fun. I also feel kind of relieved that Kira has a friend now. I didn't want him to be alone by himself, so I'm relieved now he's got someone with him. Yeah, and eventually they'll get smart and get survivally, but for now, you know, they're just enjoying each other's company, which is just appropriate.
Just living their best lives on the roof, naked and drinking.
Yeah, you do you, guys. You do you. I mean, if that's your thing, don't worry about anyone seeing them. You know? It was kind of implied that they just washed their clothes when they were drying or something like that. I don't know. Maybe. Something like that.
I got some very similar, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd love to know what Paul thinks, but he did not, unfortunately, catch up on this show. But I'm sure now that he's heard how hilarious it is, he's going to rush to see that scene with the bondage naked lady, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. I have to watch Naked Ladies. Yeah, of course.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There you go.
Curiosity peaked.
No. My curiosity peaked when you summoned me from the last podcast. So
yeah, which is a great segue to Ninja Kamui. We jokingly mentioned, because Laser unfortunately decided to state, which I still think is very erroneous.
Didn't actually know that was Paul's theory. I was just giving you my own.
My God, that the kid's not dead. But we haven't seen any indication. Nothing in these episodes implies that. I mean, even when if he were, presumably he'd be with Yamaji or Zai, and they're in their own world doing their own thing. So I'm still pretty firmly in the school of they're dead.
Team Dead Kid.
Yeah. Team Dead Kid, unfortunately.
You and V-Lord. I want to be very clear. I'm not saying it's a guaranteed thing. I just think it's a possibility, given the narrative setup of, hey, I got this technique, but I learned it from someone else who could do that technique. I'm like, so what did they do with the technique then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's literally all I've got going on there.
Well, I mean, so there's that. I mean, obviously she taught Emma how to use it. So, like, you know, you're like, okay, so now we explained how he's still alive. But if they know how to do that, then, well, wait a minute, you're not showing the sun as much at all, mind you. So, okay, did the boy really die? That's where that comes from. And I think that's even more like suspect now, because you're like, well, wait a minute. Yes, I understand we're talking about the mom this whole time. And yeah, you see like a flash of the sun every once in a while, but you're just kind of like, well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Is there something else going on here that we don't know about? Like, so yeah, I mean, Laser, welcome to the dark side.
Yeah, okay. Do you have cookies?
Yes. Ooh. Yes.
All right, yeah. Then.
I have chocolate chip, and I have a special cookie just for you.
Ooh.
Well, you know who doesn't have cookies?
Sketch has the best cookies.
Yeah. Well, no, Sketch is on my team. He's in agreement with me that kid's dead. So sad. I still maintain that it would cheapen the mission by having him live, you know, through some special
secret art. I think it would work in the Mahdi wants him to live on, and that gives him something to live on for. That's the other half of my side of that. Other than that, I mean,
I also would think after what happened in episode 9, like, it completely threw off how I thought this was going to go. So the beginning of the episode, we have Mike Jason and Hegan and Asuka, or Emma. We'll just call her Emma for the sake of ease. They've all gotten back together. They're all reunited and they have this plan. They're going to hack Alza, get some dirt, make it public. And Hegan's going to use that to take out the organization. We see Yamaji and Joe, the corrupt Elon Musk type character, arguing.
Alza and, guy.
Yeah. Skeevy Joe is what I'm calling him, and he's definitely revealing his megalomaniac side, because he says that he wants total control. He's disrespectful to Yamaji. He gets angry at them, says they keep getting in the way, they keep messing up, and Yamaji's like has this very cool demeanor, but you can tell like he's like, you're gonna regret this. And it kind of puts a different spin on that relationship, because now I'm thinking that he's trying to get something, and then he's out. Once he gets what he wants, Yamaji, he's done with Joe, because he is powerful in his own right. So I mean it becomes clear later what that is, more or less, but there's definitely trouble at the with the villain side of things. Hegan, of course, is trying to convince Emma to flee. You know, once everything is settled, he wants her to have a good life. Definitely a moment of foreboding. And she says that, you know, she's also feels connected to these people and these things. And so she's not ready to run away and leave it. She wants to see this through. Meanwhile, Skeevy Joe is having this video call with some politician and tries to spin the power plant explosion, blaming it on terrorists. And you can tell politician's not buying it. And, you know, there's some threat to pulling their partnership, of course. So Joe, who's, you know, kind of an asshole about the thing, when he hangs up, he just gets pretty sinister about it and tries to call Big D, which I just can't get over that's his name. His name is Big D.
He's the
samurai with the 90s style flat top haircut, high top haircut. And man, is he rocking that haircut.
He absolutely is.
Yeah. And he's there getting his hair all perfect, and he doesn't pick up the phone. He's like, I don't need to talk to him. You know, he's got nothing to say to me, and he's waiting for his suits having an upgrade, which is an important thing to note later. There's some weird, creepy joke between Skeevy Joe and his secretary, the young lady, about her making it up to him, which completely threw me, like, changed what I thought the nature of this relationship was, because I cannot see that woman touching him with a 10-foot pole. Yeah, but
no
anyway,
one would want to touch that dude. He's just got enough money, you know.
I guess she doesn't seem like that type to me, though. As he's walking out, he sees Zai, and he's kind of teasing him and saying, you know, I would have had you in from the get-go. I would never have, you know, held you back. And, you know, it's been eating away at Zai that he hasn't been able to pursue Joe, obviously, but we'll see that come up later. And he checks on the Gosaku gear, which is our, like, our Gundam suit, if you will. But I like
Ninja it. Gundams.
It's the, Ronin Warrior suit.
Yeah, that's totally it.
Yeah. Big D gets a message, his gear's ready, so he suits up, and we saw earlier that he left a tracking device on the truck, and so he uses that to track down Hegon. You know, he wanted their encounter to be elegant and to be equal, because he's an honorable man and he wants an elegant fight. And so the two of them fight. It's way too short of a fight, though. I was kind of disappointed with it. I mean, it was cool to see their abilities, but I felt like this is the first time I felt not satisfied by an action sequence. But there's a lot going on, because Joe, the cheater McCheater face that he is, has a bunch of his soldier guys show up, and then they start shooting. Mike comes out and he's standing up, you know, and defending them. Meanwhile, Jason and Emma are trying to hack servers, and Emma's like, you take over from here, upload it to my server. If anything happens, like, that's where it'll be. And she's like, I'm going to go and take care of my partner. And she reunites with Mike and has his back. And it's a little bit touching, you know. There's clear implication that she now has this understanding of partnership with him. And he's like a little matter. He's like, I'm trying to protect you here. And she's like, no, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm here to do my bit. So Hegon and Big D are fighting it out. Everybody's fighting. D's really angry that the soldiers have shown up, because they're fighting. They're crashing his fight, and he doesn't think this is honorable. But they get on, keep doing it. Asuka's kind of a badass. She like throws a fire hydrant, explodes it, and then like shoots them in the smoke. And then like, it's actually, I love being able to see her in action a little bit, because I feel like we don't get to see a lot of her action sequences. We kind of get some inferences, a little bits and pieces when she's telling her backstory, but it's cool to see her fighting. Mike gets shot and she has a bit of a freak out, but he's all right. He's got a bulletproof vest. And then, Big D and Hegon are fighting, and Hegon gets better of him and stabs him through the chest with his like crossed swords. And so they take off the top part of their suits. So they're all like muscular chest stuff, which I'm fine with. We can see more of that. Anyway, Deason stabbed, and he acknowledges his opponent's power. He says that was an elegant fight, you know, finish it off. And he's happy with everything. Like, you kind of get the impression that he just wanted, if he was going to go, he wanted to die a warrior's death. So, you know, he feels like he got that out of this. He got that out of Hegon, and he's prepared to die. And then his suit starts flashing, and he's like, no, that's not honorable. He's complaining. And it becomes clear that the quote unquote upgrade that was done to his suit was a bomb set to explode that was going to kill everybody. And so he uses the last of his power. You know, he's got that kind of scorpion arm thing to push Hegon out of the way to save him. Emma's there, and Mike's running for her towards her to try and save her. And she uses her little smartwatch thing to get her robots to save him instead, to keep him from getting her. And then,
that got me crying already before we even got anywhere.
Talk about not seeing that coming. Like, wow.
Yeah, absolutely did not see that one coming.
Yeah. And then it's not even like a sudden thing and it happens. Like, you really got to suffer through her dying in a real, I mean, it's a good moment. It's a good scene. You know, she's dying. Everybody crowds around her and they're telling, like, you know, you can't die. Hegon's saying, you have to survive, Asuka. You have to survive, Emma. And Mike's like, no, I'm going to get you to the hospital. And Jason comes over and he's like, I'm going to call the hospital. And her device is flickering. The device that keeps her in disguise is flickering, and she decides to let it go off, and she says, this is my real face. And he's like, she says, you would never recognize me, right? And he's like, no, I'd recognize you no matter what. And it's very touching. And he points out after she's passed that he thought of her as like a daughter, a second chance at having that relationship.
God, that twisted the knife so much.
Yeah. But honestly, I mean, for her, you know, she dies, I don't want to say happy, but sort of happy, because she's not alone. She had people who cared about her, and she thought she was going to die alone. But I'm not going to lie, this completely took me for a spin, because if you remember, her initial mission is to find someone to replace the leadership of the Ninja Clan. And my theory was, in like a couple episodes ago, that, you know, because I'm expecting Higan to die at the end of this, and that it's going to be her who survives. But now that she's gone, like, I don't know what's going to happen now. Holy shit. Like, what, who's going to take over? And who's going to continue that mission, man? Like, it's definitely throwing me. I don't know.
You know who's going to do it. It's Higan's son.
No, Steven, don't you dare. You take that back. You take that back.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, more to the dark side.
Yeah.
I mean, for her to die, we already like almost witnessed her death before. And like, I was like, I'm live tweeting this before, and it's like, oh no, she's dead by episode 4 or something when you meet her before. And it's like, oh, you know, she was a great character. And then she survives. It's like, oh, okay, she's alive. They're going to keep her. And then she dies again. And it's like, oh no. It's like,
for real this time.
Yeah, it's like, you don't know where this show is going.
No. I
mean, it's not a Fena thing where you kind of can see it all add up. You know, it's more on par with, you know, the housing complex C, where you kind of don't know what's going on.
Except for me, because I kind of called that one.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, there's a lot of missing pieces and a lot of things that you're trying to build as if you're watching this. And they're giving you everything in little bite-sized chunks to show you. I bet in the rewatch of this, and if Toonami's going to re-air it again, and you do see that at the end of the block, that there's things that you miss when you're watching either the dub or the sub and you rewatch it. I bet watching this and understanding it, there's going to be threads that are in episode 1 and 2 that plays on all the way up to the end of the show.
There's definitely a lot of rewatch potential here. There's a lot of details. Even watching some of these episodes twice, there's a lot of details that I picked up on. And then I'm trying to, when I can, rewatch it in the sub version to see like if there's any differences in the language. But yeah, like, but also the sheer action, the action scenes, rewatching just to see some of the detail on that, because they happen pretty quickly, but they're really well choreographed, and they're pretty cool. I wasn't super happy with this fight with Dee. It wasn't bad. It was a little underwhelming compared to some of the previous fights. And then the one that comes up, but I feel like, you know, with 12 episodes, they're trying to fit in a lot. This, a lot happens in this episode, and it's a pretty emotional one too.
As much as a lot happened, I feel like, I mean, yeah, I could have gotten more out of that fight, but other than that, I feel like we got good resonance with what was going on, you know?
Yes. I've had no issues with the pacing at all with this episode, with the series. I think it's been really well paced, and it's not often that I, you know, can feel that way about a show, and especially one where they're trying to fit in such a rich story. They're doing a good job of filling it all in. I still can't get over like this Jason character. Like, he doesn't at all strike me as, you know, what I think real Jason's like, but I think he's been a fun addition to the group, but yeah. Paul, what do you feel about losing Emma? Come on.
It's hitting him hard.
It's hitting me hard. Just kind of explains why the son's probably alive.
Are we still on this?
I mean, listen, so the thing that we get to hear over what, like 2 or 3 episodes is her describing how Emma knows his wife. So It's like, okay, Mark. you're like, okay, so you're talking a lot about the wife. You're talking a lot about how your new mission is to protect him and to make it so that way he goes on. So, I mean, in a way, if we're being honest about this, probably Emma's death and learning from Emma about his wife basically saying she wants him to live. Yeah, that's probably going to be enough right there for him to live, because you want to honor your wife. But I mean, in all seriousness, I do think that it's, if you're talking about that and Emma being so passionate about that, it makes me sit there and say, okay, maybe there is something real to this son being alive. They haven't really indicated it yet, but it does kind of add something to it if the son does show up at some point here in the last, what, I think we said that this is going to be 13 episodes?
12.
Well, there's two more then.
Well, so Sketch had said that he saw on the Canadian Adult Swim that there's 13 episodes of Ninja Kamui, so maybe it's 13? We'll have to wait and see. But what I was trying to say was, I almost feel like something else is going to come into this picture here, because, you know, now he's fighting his other partner in crime here, and I'm wondering if, just based on the small portion that we've seen of their relationship, maybe like he saved his son and, you know, his son's going to just show up at the end or something. I don't know. I mean, it's
really fixated on this though. Like that, like I'm just kind of wondering, like, why is that so important to you as part of the narrative? Like, without having any evidence of that, we're given so much other rich context that is happening, things that are happening, evidence we do have. And like, I feel like you're really fixated on the son thing that we don't really have anything to indicate that that's even happening.
I mean, I guess it's the same way, it's the same thing that Laser's saying. I mean, it's a reason for him to stay alive. I mean, Emma kind of gave him a reason because she saved him from dying so that way he could live, because that's what his wife wanted.
Well, he had to finish his mission too. She rescued him because he had something to do.
Right, but if you remember, Emma's telling him like his wife wanted him to live. So that's why Emma was there to kind of help him, because she didn't want him, she wanted to honor her legacy. And, you know, I don't know. It seems, I'm not trying to be fixated on it. I really am not.
You really are, though. Like,
I mean, I'm not saying that. So, okay, first of all, am I going to be disappointed if the son's not there? No, I'm not going to be disappointed. But it's just very weird that the wife had this technique, which she taught to Emma. Emma used it on him to keep him alive. Okay. By the way, you can only use this technique once. Okay, fine. Whatever.
The question then goes, well, then why didn't Emma use it on her kid?
Exactly.
If he's already dead, then that's why. Because he was already dead.
But they haven't shown that that was the case. The scene between her and her kid dying, we don't really...
He wakes up in the room and both of their corpses are there, and then he's sitting there with them. Like, there's a whole scene. If you go back to episode one,
yeah,
he's there with the dead bodies.
But again, kid could have just been knocked out with the same thing he was.
Okay, so, but he was sitting there like,
wasn't the house on fire? I mean, they could have took him out, but that house was on fire. So, I mean, they're kind of dead.
I'm 99.99% certain that the kid's dead.
Well, okay, so I think what Laser's saying, and obviously we don't want to show a kid getting killed because that's not going to look good on network TV, but I think where Laser's going with this is Emma saved him with the technique. Why wouldn't it make sense that the mom did the same thing with their son. And here's the other thing. Yes, they were both, the dead bodies were there, but it doesn't show him like pulling up the cover and looking to see if his son's there.
Why
you know what I mean?
Do that though.
Like, but you see what I'm saying? Like, for all intents and purposes, she might have, if she planned for Emma to protect him, what's to say
that,
there wasn't a plan
okay,
for the
I'm
son?
Gonna stop you there because she didn't plan for that. That sort of, this sort of just happened.
Yeah.
Okay, I y'all do think something's going on there, but that's not a good argument on that.
Here's the only thing I'm saying. You're so far down this hole that I feel like you say you're not fixated on it, but it is taken the precedence of reasoning out everything that's happening. Like, I like what you said about giving, you know, Emma save Asuka in this case, saving Higan, you know, because she wanted him to live, because that's, but she says, I didn't have time to save anyone else. She straight up says that.
She didn't.
She says,
right.
Yeah, yeah. But she's didn't. Saying, you're the only one I could save, that she wanted to save all of them. So as far as she knows, even as far as she knows,
sure,
the family is dead. But I do appreciate that she's trying to fulfill that. I guess for me, like, you know, and Steven said, like, this, anything can happen in the show in terms of, you know, not expecting her to die. And certainly not, I definitely didn't think that her character would exit like this. You know, I could see her trying to sacrifice her safety to save Mike and to save Higan, you know, because she strikes me, she's projected that type of character. But for the narrative's sake, it really did come out of left field, you know, having her die. I'm still pretty angry about it, actually. Like, I was expecting her character to take on some kind of leadership role in the future, but like, that's all shot to hell. And I still maintain, like, in revenge stories, there has to be a price. You have to pay a price for taking your revenge. And usually in cases like this, like, Higan's made it pretty clear. He doesn't care. He's only surviving long enough that he can complete his mission and take down the ninjas and take revenge. And I think it's fully his intention to die at the end of this, regardless.
Oh, yeah.
He has.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, he's not trying to live or survive. He doesn't really have any reason to live now either. He's hyper focused on what he's got to do. And now he has one more reason. Now Emma's dead. And he's got just one more reason. Nothing else is really tying him. His friendship with Mike isn't even that deep. Like, they're both in it because they're both useful to each other. And they both get something out of it. But he doesn't really have a deep relationship with him. You know, like, he did care about Emma. So I still don't think the end game is Higan making it out of this as life.
I don't think that's his plan, but...
No, I don't think that's his plan, but I do think that Higan has more of a reason to live now because, again, I think the whole purpose of Emma saving him was for him to live on. But, you know, I just think that what's going on now is you got basically... You basically got a situation now where you have to kind of go, okay, what do I need to do to take all this down? Like, the original plan was, I'm going to go after every single power plant and, you know, do something like that. Now it's, oh, I'm just going to go cut off the head of the snake, basically, which, okay, fine. I guess that's what you have to do. But at the end of the day, it's like, what happened to the plan? You know, it's just like, okay. And also, I do think that, you know, as I watched these episodes tonight, I do agree that I think Emma dying kind of so soon after she was revealed kind of like threw me off too, because it's like, well, okay, but it doesn't really, I don't know, it just didn't kind of make sense that you would kill this character off that seemed to be so important, because in the grand scheme of things, it's like, okay, this is your wife's apprentice, basically. That's what she is. She's basically your wife's apprentice. So you look at it and you go, so then why do we kill her so quick? Like, and I agree with you as well, Carl, like that would have made more sense to have her in charge.
Yeah.
But now, who do you put in charge? Hegan is the only one that you could put in charge at the end of this. At least that's what it makes sense to me story-wise. But I'm sure in the next episode, we're going to get episode 11. We're going to get something that gives us a little bit more of a, oh, okay, maybe this is where we're going with it now kind of thing. I hope, because.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I have two theories. Okay. So I have, the son's alive theory. So that basically means that somehow in the next few episodes, it's going to be revealed that the son's alive, right? Somehow. And he's being trained under the head of the ninjas, you know, that old guy. Yep. And so then at the end of it, basically, Hegan knows about maybe the last episode that he has his son. His son's alive. He's trying to save his son, but he knows this final fight with Maji is going to be happening. Something happens with that. He dies, but he passes it on to his son. That would be the son's alive theory. The other theory, which looks more promising, I would say, is they're all dead. Son's dead. He basically cuts off the head of the snake at the end of it, but he dies. What happens is that the detective... Mike, it's going to be revealed with Jason and Mike what happened with everything. Alza dies, the guy, the founder of Alza, the Shady Joe. He dies Stevie probably.
Joe.
Yes, Stevie Joe dies at. He probably dies at episode, probably the next episode or the one before the end. He'll die. If I know TV shows, that guy would die quickly because he's making so many enemies. And you know who would do it? Probably his secretary will kill him, which, you know, would be probably good.
Hope she does, but continue.
Yeah. So mainly,
that's a good theory.
Mainly, I think what happens is with that one is he has to face all the robot masters, you know, those other Gusakugi or ninjas, faces them all at the, you know, table. Somehow he kills them all, and maybe in one go or whatever, but it's going to be epic face off. And then he goes on to destroy the head of the snake. That guy won't die after like, you know, 2-3 hits, you know, after their big fight. He'll get into his massive Gosaku gear kind of body because he's going to have one that's overpowered. And then he'll finally kill him. And then it's so taxing on him, he dies. And then something happens with Alza that city implodes or something. And then it's all going to be like revealed, like, you know, Mike kind of saved it, but then there's going to be a dedication thing. Well, Mike like walks up to the grave and he's going to be right next to Emma.
Yeah, that's very anime.
Yeah. That's the two theories I have right now, what's going to happen. Other than that, you know, it's fun putting the pieces together, and it's fun debating it. I'm 50-50 on if that kid's dead or alive. I haven't thought of that, if that kid was alive the whole time. But if he is, it does give him, does give Hegan more life to enact his vengeance plan, but he's still going to enact it anyway, because either if he's alive or dead, and then Emma just pushes it forward that he wants to destroy these people that destroyed his life, and now he's going to take every single one out. That guy's not going to be the head of any ninja anything. I mean, unless he gets redeemed by the end, but any revenge arc that I've seen on TV, they're dead at the end.
The idea of Dilly killing Joseph. I mean, she's his bodyguard, so, you know, you can imagine, like, she reaches a point of, I've had enough of this bullshit, And she's
like, I could absolutely see that happening.
Yeah, I see where this is going. And like in a moment of chaos, she just like stabs him or something. And I don't know, that will be extremely satisfying, I think, for everybody, including mm-hmm. Dilly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is a really good, this is a good transition then to episode 10.
Yeah. Right.
So I honestly, you have you're referring to kind of the mission that Emma left behind, and you see Mike and Hegan share this moment. It starts out kind of like sweet and endearing, where Hegan smirks or laughs, and Mike's like, "Did you laugh?" And he's like, "I didn't laugh." But more seriously, they talk about Emma and what to do about her, and Hegan's like pointing out that, you know, we didn't have homes or you know, places to be buried. If where we fell, our bodies were destroyed, you know, and that was that. So he's saying we should leave her here and remember her here, where she was loved. And so that's kind of, it's a nice little moment. And then we get, I think this has been a long time coming, but Zai, we see a little preview, a young Zai. It's pretty clear. It's pretty clear that it's him.
Yeah.
He's a group of children, and they're hiding behind a locked door. And then, you know, this creep comes out to go after and do God knows what to these children. And he's like, he is biting his finger when a bomb goes off and kills the adults, or incapacitates the adults outside. The kids are released from this area, and Zai goes and grabs a knife or a sword or something. And he just jumps and starts stabbing like crazy, the guy, like, just to make sure he's dead, I guess. Poor little psychopath. Yamaji is pretty impressed, and he initially, like, he grabs him, and the kid takes the knife and stabs through his hand. And so he decides to bring him back to the compound with him to train him. Meanwhile, Hegan, and in the present, Hegan's determined to continue hunting down Yamaji, and Mike says he'll take care of Alza and continue with their plan to leak the information. Except that there's a problem. Jason says that her files are encrypted and he can't access them. Of course, there's a problem.
And of course, she didn't leave them an access key or anything.
No, of course not. But she, I would assume she's a smart lady. She would have had I think she must have been thought that Jason could figure out a way to get the files, because
wait
she
a
did,
minute. What huh? if the key is the kid?
Oh my God.
I don't think it's that.
I love you, Steven. I love it. Anyway,
I don't actually think that's it, but that's funny.
There's a new broadcast that, you know, brings up the blown up plant from before, which, if I recall correctly, they blew it up themselves. So it's kind of funny that he's trying to find a reason why, like, it's all, you know, that he's trying to be accountable to his politician friends and keep them from pulling the contract. But he leaks the media that there's some terrorists, and lo and behold, the terrorists are very familiar pictures of our crew of four minus one. Rest in peace, Emma. And Joe has spun the story pretty efficiently, as he tells the politician, who I can't remember for my life who he's supposed to be, but I don't think it's relevant. All you need to know is he's a powerful politician, and he has these contracts with Joe, and Joe's really trying to keep them going. He sees this as a segue for him to be in control and be powerful. So politician doesn't trust him. He says he doesn't trust that these factories are going to be safe, and they kind of sort of leave it at that. Joe's pretty pissed though. And then we get a cut to Yamaji, and interestingly enough, you know, we alluded to this earlier, he's talking with his assistant, and he says, well, we have all the info we need on the Gosaku gear. So it's pretty clear that, to me at least, that there's no further need for this partnership. If that's what he was after for now, like, if he has the Gosaku gear and if they can build their own, they don't need Joseph, and they don't need his technology and his money for all of this. So anyway, I'm that's a bit of a conclusion, but it is implied a little bit. So we go back to Joseph, who, oh no, my dad has been leaked, and he's, you know,
just, oh my god, the freak out is hilarious.
It's pretty,
he's throwing an absolute child tantrum.
It's great. Yes, he's having a meltdown. Back to Hegon, he gets a message delivered by a crow, which is carrying a token, saying he's been challenged to a duel, and Jason's like, you're gonna duel a crow? Like, no, dude, no.
No, that's not how that works.
Yeah, and then we go back to flashback Zai, and he's got a little bit of a temper issue. He's kind of a psycho. I don't think he's actually a psychopath. I just think he, you know, doesn't know decency, and he's being raised to be a weapon. So he's fighting, and he and Hegon have a difference of opinion on what's the proper way to behave as a ninja. And we don't see their duel. I think they're trying to save the moment for when they fight towards the end. So we don't see, but Mari's like, you know, this is the best way to solve this issue. And they fight to a draw. And then we kind of see scenes where the three of them, Hegon, Mari, and Zai, you know, working their way through the ranks and working their way up to the top as ninjas, and also working as a team together. You see how they ultimately figure out a way to work together, how they bond as a team on their mission. And it's a pretty cool action sequence when you do see them fighting together. That was a nice touch. And then ultimately we get to the point where Mari and Hegon leave, and because they felt close to Zai, they tell him that they're leaving, and he's heartbroken very clearly. Like he's really broken up about them, and he clearly feels betrayed, you know, because he said, well, I thought we were all in this together and you're leaving me now. He's like, well, you're going to have to kill me. But Mari just cries, and they turn and walk away. They refuse to fight him, and they leave him. So it's definitely a sense that Zai has some unfinished business with them. So Hegon, with Jason in tow, heads to their old hideout to meet Zai, and they're both in their gear, red and blue, respectively, which is, it's kind of mixed for some cool imagery. I honestly wish, though, that they weren't fighting in their gear. I feel like then we don't get to see some of their ninja abilities, but
I think that's going to be next week.
Yeah. Yep. It's a pretty amazing fight. Like, the camera does great view going over and around in the angles of the fight, and it's pretty fantastic. Like, we do get justice from watching this sequence. And initially, you know, they're kind of even, and they stab each other, and Zai's like, stop playing games with me, fight me for real. And it makes me kind of wonder, when I was watching them, like, where does Hegon feel Zai is in all of this? You know, like, as far as his revenge goes, is this just a fight he feels like he has to have because he's there and he's challenged? Or does he feel like Zai is part of the problem and is responsible, and ultimately he has to have, like, I kind of wondered, you know, whether or not he felt the same vitriolic hatred and need for vengeance that he felt with the other members of this clan that he's set out for. It's not really clear, but maybe they'll have some dialogue. But it is really cool when we leave them. I mean, they're both, their tops of their armor comes off. And it looks like they're gonna fight hand to hand, because they both, their swords get thrown out from their intense fighting. But you get a close up of their faces, and you see Zai's first, and his pupils are all white. Like, he has no facial expression. He's like, he's blank. There's no feeling there. And then you see Hegon's, and he's very clearly got a very intense angry expression. His eyes are red. Like, it's an interesting juxtaposition there. I think that was absolutely on purpose and a great decision, in my opinion, for the animation. But anyway, apart from the duel happening, Mike has contacted his old FBI boss, who was also his previous partner before Emma, and he attempts to appeal to his good nature to do the right thing. But of course, it doesn't work, because sometimes if I feel like people, once they've gone corrupt, you know, takes a lot to bring them back. So he ends up calling the authorities on Mike, and Mike has to bail. So that plan didn't work. He was hoping that he could use them to be an avenue to release the information that they've hacked from Auza, but I guess he's going to have to come up with another plan. I personally like Jason's plan to release it on their equivalent of social media. Like, shit goes viral. I feel like that's a pretty efficient way to do it, to maintain your neutrality. Just stick it on the internet and let shit go wild. I mean,
put it on WikiLeaks.
Cover it. Go on.
I was just gonna say, put it on WikiLeaks.
Yeah. I mean, his plan to hide it under like a picture of a big bosomed lady is not quite what I would have envisioned, but it's still pretty funny.
That would get people to look at it.
Yes.
Yeah. Clickbait.
This was a really good episode.
Really absolutely. Good episode. It's well thought out. The characters are doing what you'd expect them to, and complications are arising from a serious loss. It's consequences for things. It's really well done.
Yeah.
Consequences, it's interesting. Even for the bad guy, because... why won't people do what I want? Because you're being a dumbass.
Yeah, it is really interesting to see how things are kind of breaking down slowly for the bad guys. Like, I just feel like we're one episode away from, you know, the ninjas completely abandoning their agreement or whatever they have with Joseph and his organization, and they just, like, nope out of there, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I could see that happening. I mean, it could go that they take over the city, right? They take over everything, because I don't know the relationship between that, but I assume that Auza signed the agreement to them, so they take over everything, and so the ninjas could, because they signed it because they thought that the ninja way was dying in Japan. It seemed like it. And now they're in, let's say, what, Nevada, or somewhere out in like Arizona, in some town that they created in the desert. And it's like, oh, you're still doing stuff, but you're in a different country. And it I don't know. It seems strange that they would sign that contract to do that. But I assume that there's some other hidden rule in the ninjas in this world that they can undo that contract. And so that he's going to, you know, Auza and his whole company is going to die somehow that way. That the loophole's there, and, you know, that he's going to give the Order 66, you know, the Order 66 yeah. happening. And it's like all of them, like, just kill each other or something.
Well, he's unraveling, so
yeah,
something's gonna happen.
Yeah, and Zai's interesting. Zai's a Sasuke of this group.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like, that's like Team 7 of Naruto. But it's interesting that he feels like, and he's mad at Higan because he left him alone again.
Yeah,
and that's like, that's where all your anger is coming from, because you had a shoulder. Did you have a shoulder, like, all this blame or something? There's something in there that we're not seeing that's probably going to be revealed, but it does feel like he has undue anger towards Higan and then Mari to have a life. And I guess he can't have that life.
Yeah.
Or there's something there.
That was his life, and he thought that they were all living this life together, and they abandoned him for something different. And he, you know, that was the only, it seemed like the only thing resembling like affection, friendship, bonding with another human that he'd known was with the two of them, and for them to leave, you know, it's he's heartbroken because he's like, you see it physically in the moment when they walk away in the snow, and he like,
he feels abandoned because they made a big deal of, we'll help you find the emotions that you don't have. We'll help you get there. And then they leave him.
Yeah. It occurred to me that, you know, at the beginning of the episode, Hegon says something about, you know, he wants to free all the ninjas too. Like, and I think it's not just, you know, one of the things we saw from the previous episodes is there was definitely discord when they made this agreement with Alza. They changed their mission and they changed what their organization was. And there was a few that were killed because they rebelled, and then the rest of them just ran away. So for him, it's freeing the ones who stayed, who may or may not believe in this cause anymore. And then whoever's left alive from who ran away, if there are any, I got the sense of like, you know, his isn't just revenge anymore. Now he really does believe he needs to free them all from this corrupted, like, the fact that Yamaji thinks that he can own them even unto death. He's like, I need to end this permanently. So, yeah. It's a good episode. Paul? You with us, bro?
I'm still here.
What'd you think his eye? What'd you think his eye?
You know, I guess I'm a little confused at how this went from like, oh, there's ninjas fighting, this is great, and then all of a sudden, oh, we're having mecha fights.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, all right. I guess there had to be a twist to this, but you know, it's going to be interesting to see, number one, who wins this battle, but number two, if they even kill each other, because, you know, it's like, maybe, you know, he can be redeemed and they both kill the snake, so to speak.
I don't think that's going to happen.
But no, I don't think that's going to happen either, but I kind of wish that would happen.
Zai's going to train Hegon's son. That's what's going to happen. Oh, God.
So, let me... I love you, Steven.
I don't think he should be around any children ever.
Oh, yeah. That guy's a little bit on
he's a little broken.
A little?
Yeah.
Stabbing a guy dead about 20 more times. Yeah.
By the way, Steven, I will... Your theory about the sun, I think that's where I was going. I just didn't really, you know, put that all together, but the narrative in the whole thing was they're trying to get these techniques that the ninjas have, right? So
it's, are they like, collecting them?
Yeah, they're like Pokemon. but in all seriousness, like,
oh,
what, you know, the thought process may be, okay, well, the sun knows the technique, maybe, so we'll just get it from the sun, or maybe it'll manifest in the sun and then whatever.
I'm not sure that's how that works.
Well, no, but it does look like they can show.
It's not like people. Ninjutsu or Kekkei Genkai. Like, it's not like in your blood. Like, they've learned, they're each given a secret technique and then no one else knows it. And then they can only pass it on by showing it to a person.
And they can only use it once, right?
No, they can use it multiple times.
Yeah, that was just the one ability that can only, the life-saving ability could only be used once on per a person.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's not really clear to me what Hegon's is. Like, I thought the shadow...
The shadow breath, arm thing. That's what I thought this was.
Yeah.
Shadow breath, which was really fucking cool, by the way, and I haven't seen it in a few episodes, and I'm mad about that. I need to see that now. Hopefully next episode we'll get to see it. But obviously they're going to have some brief dialogue moment between the two of them. But Zai's a really interesting character. this is definitely going to have to come to a head between the two of them, obviously. But, I mean, he was, there's no way Egon was going to be able to get to Yamaji without going through Zai anyway. And I suspect that Yamaji doesn't know that they're having this duel, that Zai was told not to go after him for the longest time.
Well, wait a minute. Wasn't it in... It was either episode 8 or episode 9 where...
He gives him permission or something.
He does,
Yeah, so I think he knows that this is going to happen. Maybe he doesn't know that they're doing it right now, but he knew it was going to happen. I think what was happening is he was just waiting for the suit to be complete and powered up completely before he went after him, which is fine. But...
Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you what, if Zai does somehow go, all right, I'm going to help you take out the bad guys, that's when his bomb's going to, in his chest, is going to explode, because that's how these things go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's just weird, though, because it's like, again, why do you have to face each other in mecha suits? Like, you guys weren't doing this in mecha suits before, so you might as well just...
Well, everyone had to get an upgrade. I mean,
well, and also, at the end of this episode, there won't be any more mecha suits for a while.
Well, one thing that I noticed is, I mean, I was under the impression that this is kind of about the survival of this clan and their ancient ways and how they're able to keep up with the times and modern technology. And part of the reason that Yamaji even went this direction wasn't just about, you know, maintaining his mission and you know, their protection of Japan, but expanding that globally, but also like a general, we have to keep up with the times mentality, and that involves technology. And Joseph has this powerful, Alza has this powerful tech, and ultimately that's, you know, Yamaji clearly wants the Gosaku gear. It gives a new edge to their ability to maintain their status as a powerful clan with these other abilities. Because if they're the only ones that have this gear, which is even more of an incentive for Yamaji to make sure that he breaks off from Joseph. Like, you can tell things are tense between them. Like, I would really like to see the head come... like things kind of really openly break between them. But I also was a little bit like, why are they in Gundam suits? But part of me was like, A, okay, they wanted to put as much cool shit as possible in the series, and B, they're trying to tell, like, incorporate into a story about how, like, technology versus, you know, tradition.
On social media, I think Jason said that the suits were inspired by tokusatsu stuff, so Power Rangers, Kamen Rider, Super Sentai. So that thing of, like, you need more power to defeat the enemy, to defeat the boss. It's like, now you need some extra power, some super power, because not just, you know, the suits at points will handle it, but not as much as, you know, what's within you. And I think this next episode coming up, the previews that we've seen, they don't need the suits anymore. Their ninja skills will show off of more of what they can do.
Yeah, that suit came off really easily. That's very disconcerting.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is going to be interesting to see how this like goes into the ending of the series. But, you know, I do wonder, like, what the end game is going to be. I do wonder, like, what's going to happen after they hopefully kill the final boss, so to speak. I don't want to talk about WWE, but, you know.
I see what you mean there.
Yeah, you see what I did there?
We've done so well to stay on topic, Paul. I'm so proud of us. Let's keep this going. Let's keep the momentum.
Right, right. So let's go back and talk about the sun a little bit more.
Oh, my God. any other, aside from this, final thoughts about these episodes? Well, I guess I feel like that's a podcast.
Yeah,
that is a podcast. That's what we do. What we do every week is record a podcast.
No, I mean, that's the, yeah, I think we covered everything. Paul, do you want to do the honors of doing some house cleaning?
You just don't want to do it. That's what it is.
I really don't like doing house cleaning. Well, let's sound like a robot when I do the house cleaning.
All right, let's go get the vacuum out and I'll go get the mop. And
yeah. Wait, where's his kid so we can have him do it?
Oh my God.
Dead. The child is dead. The child is fucking dead, Paul. Just warn him and move the fuck on. We all need to move past this.
Listen. You summoned me because of this. You knew you were gonna get harassed with this, so you're just gonna have to take it at this point.
No, we're glad. I think it makes it more fun to have this
kind of. It's good to have different opinions because if we're having this back and forth, how much you want about our listeners are too, with our friends and other people.
Right.
It's just fun to have these theories, and then later on we can like laugh about whatever it turns out to be.
Absolutely, and it'll be what it'll be. But you know, that's what makes a good discussion about stories: different perspectives.
Yeah.
And by the way, I mean, in all seriousness, like, who doesn't want a happy ending from a series? So you know. Yeah, I kind of want a happy ending for him.
It better have a happy ending or some type of ending.
I don't see any way there could be a happy ending here.
Oh, no. I didn't until I looked at things the way I've been looking at it. And I'm not going to bore people with the exact same explanation I've been giving. But other than that, no, I don't see it either.
We've talked about this before with other stories and just in general with a revenge narrative. It's not often that it ends with hope for the person. Usually there is a price to pay. Mm-hmm. And when someone's lost as much as Hegon has, it's hard to foresee a hopeful future. I mean, it's who knows? Anything could happen. I think Stephen's pointed that out. Anything can really happen here. There's definitely two distinct factions of where the storyline could go. And I'm seeing now Mike is taking on the Auza part and Hegon's taking on the Ninja Clan. So I suspect the next two episodes will divide and conquer these two villains with our heroes. And meanwhile, Jason's just like, I'm just trying to survive and break into this shit so people don't think I'm crazy, you know. Poor guy. Getting sucked in.
Yeah, he's in so many conspiracies. He just wants one to work out.
Yeah.
By the way, before I do the house cleaning, I just got to say, like, some of how Jason is in that series, I'm like, you know, I could see him doing some of this shit. I'm like, oh my God. Like, they literally took him and were like, okay, we're just putting you in the series. And I'm just like, I'm here for it.
Yeah,
no, they should have just let him voice it because that would have been even more hilarious.
That would have been great. I wish.
Oh, that would have been just hilarious. So, So that's the fun part about this series is having him portrayed in there.
It is. It's a lot of fun. And I like he said he's made it his profile picture of like, man, don't you all wish you had your own animated character to make your profile page?
Yes, that would be so cool.
He's warming up to the idea of him being in the anime, yes. So, one thing I do want to say before we start the house cleaning first. It sounds like they got rid of Google Podcasts, so we won't be on there anymore. All of that's on YouTube anyways. So what is it? YouTube Music has it. We're actually on our YouTube channel. It's the podcast is generating on there now. So, I mean, you could still listen to it, I guess, on Google because they own it, but you know, whatever. So pretty much you can listen to us, our podcast on every single app that's out there. If we're not on the app that you want to listen to us on, please let us know. But the main apps that we're on are SoundCloud.com, which is the main hub, and you can download the app and listen to us there. That has all of our episodes from episode one to this one that you're listening to right now. And, you know, we're also on the other apps as well, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other ones that you know and love. So listen to us on your favorite podcast app. You can follow us on Facebook. Like us there. It's Toonami Faithful Podcast. You can follow us on X, Twitter, whatever the hell you call it these days. At Toonami Podcast is our handle. Yeah, it's Twitter. So, but anyways, and our podcasts are also on the main website now, ToonamiFaithful.com, which has kind of sort of gotten an upgrade. So
yeah, it's got a new swanky look to it. So check it out. Check out the website.
I put some shine on it a little bit.
ToonamiFaithful.com.
Yes, ToonamiFaithful.com.
And upgraded the other social media as well with the new look.
Yes. And you can also, as I lose my train of thought right there, you can also help us out, help the podcast out, help the website and everything that hopefully we'll be doing in the near future by going to our Patreon, patreon.com/ToonamiFaithful. There you can donate to us. There is a monthly subscription. Or you can just, on the Toonami Faithful Podcast Twitter, there's a way for you to donate directly. You can do that as well. Every little bit helps. It just helps us fund what we do and, you know, helps us do more cool shit. So that's why we do it. We don't do it to give Darrell booze money or lasers so he can buy more anime.
I would buy more anime if you want me to, though. You just give me money, I'll do it.
I don't know. I was just
don't threaten me with a good time.
To blame. So, yeah, that's about it. But I guess we can get on out of here.
Steven, where can they find you?
Yeah, I run the social media side of Toonami Faithful, but
you do?
I do.
And you do such a good job.
Oh, you do. Thank you.
You're not allowed to leave. I will stalk you if you leave.
Most of that's Brittany. She does a lot of the smart stuff. I just do all the goofy stuff. So everything you see on there that's like really goofy or stupid, that's me. All the smart stuff, that's Brittany. That's our other social media manager.
It's a dream team. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. You guys rock.
Thank you. You can find me at MXA Ghost. That's on like all platforms, all whatever. And then I stream at twitch.tv.mxaghost. I do some Toonami stuff. I'll stream the schedule, making that stuff out on there. And whenever their video games or whatever stuff come out, I'll do that stuff on there. It's whatever.
Awesome. Laser Kid, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Laser Kid Prime. Assuming I actually go there, you can find me on Blue Sky at Laser Kid. And you can find me on my brand new podcast series, The Simuldub Saints, over on YouTube.
Paul, where can they find you?
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. You can find me everywhere. You can find me on Twitter, X, again, whatever the hell you want to call it these days, at Paul Pasquillo. You can email me, paulpasquillo@ToonamiFaithful.com. And you can listen to me on another podcast called Thoughts on Wrestling, which is... A new episode just came out last night, which took me way too long to edit, and I don't want to talk about it. But anyways, Curl, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter, and I recently cameoed on Laser Kid's podcast to talk about Blue Exorcist, so check it out when you get a chance.
By the time this comes out, that should be out.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Happy Crow Kitty, and don't worry, folks. Sketch will be back. You only have to suffer through my hosting for a bit longer. Be patient with me.
Oh, God.
You're doing a good job.
A great job.
That's a wrap. Peace, and we're out.